Welcome back into the Godly Young Men podcast. We are on episode 85. We appreciate you joining us, whether you're watching or listening. We've got another kind of standard masculinity type episode for you today. Obviously, we're the Godly Young Men podcast, so we try to touch just about every aspect of this world that has to do with being a man. We've covered, 85 episodes in. We've covered a lot of stuff. But this one is just going to be kind of just about masculinity in general. We had a Why It's Great to Be a Man episode a few episodes ago. This one will be different. But we're actually going to be taking this based off of an article by a guy named Aaron Wren, who Joe's going to tell us a little bit about more here in just a second. But the article is 10 Pillars of Healthy Masculinity. So essentially these 10 things, these 10 pillars truly make for a healthy level of masculinity. And Joe had read it, sent it to me, and I read it. This is really good stuff. Really good quality information for us to kind of look at and see, okay, this is what makes healthy masculinity. And so we thought, let's do an episode based on this. Oh, yeah. We did this before with Andrew Tate. We did, I think he had like 10 things or something like that, where we kind of looked and kind of broke down everything with the obvious qualifier that Andrew Tate is not the best role model or anything like that, right. But he does have some good things to say. This one is really, really good. I don't want to, intro it to death here, but yeah, guy's name is Aaron Wren. Shout out to him. Appreciate him for the content here. But Joe, if you want to give a little background on him.
Yeah. So Aaron Wren, it just says on American Reformer, is a co-founder and senior fellow at American Reformer. He also writes on cultural topics at aaronwren.substack.com. I have subscribed to that. He writes a lot of good stuff. Wren was previously an urban policy researcher, writer, and consultant. He was a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research for 5 years. His work has been featured in leading publications such as the New York Times, The Guardian, and The Atlantic. He's got so many good ideas, so many fascinating ideas. We've talked about it on our other podcasts. We've used his stuff, Think Deeper.
He has a lot of masculinity, though.
A lot of masculinity stuff. He's just one of the best writing on this. So if you do, make sure to... We're giving him a shout-out, but if you want to, I would go subscribe to his Substack. Got a lot of good stuff. This just happened to be one of those that caught my eye as we were going through. And interestingly, my brother also sent this to me. He was like, you should use this for Jen. I was like, already on it. Already sent it to Will.
Yeah.
So we're all kind of on the same page here. We're going to read the 10 pillars. He doesn't have much to say. We're just going to kind of riff off of this. So once again, this is all Aaron Wren stuff. This is not something we came up with. I was looking through and I think I asked you, like, would you add anything to this list? And we are both kind of like...
Not really.
No, I think he's pretty much covered these 10 pillars of healthy masculinity. And so with that, let's go ahead and get into number one. I'll read it and then let you kind of go off on this, which is identity. First pillar of healthy masculinity is identity. If you don't know who you are, you don't know what to do, is what he says. Who are you is the most fundamental question of life. I love that he starts with this one because we've talked a lot about this before, but we don't have identity as men. Like, who am I as a person? We can't always answer that in a positive way, or we can't answer that really in any way at all. It's like, I don't really know. I'm an amalgamation of different things or whatever it is. And so this idea of knowing who we are kind of is at the pillar, or is obviously it's one of the pillars, is at the foundation of the rest of these. If you don't know who you are, then what else matters?
Well, and the other, yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's exactly what I was going to say, is essentially, I don't want to read his mind, but I'm assuming there's a reason he put this number one. If you've got some of these other pillars, or you've got a lot of other things going for you, but you don't have any kind of identity or know who you are or what you're striving for, you're going to struggle. And I think we see this a lot. Again, Joe's really brainchild with this podcast was, hey, there's a lot of guys out here that are aimless. Well, a lot of that has to do with not having an identity, not knowing who you are, not knowing whose you are. And obviously from our Christian perspective, you've got to find identity in Christ. You want to hit that bottom one real fast. We got to find identity in Christ above everything else. And first of all, a lot of guys don't have that. But even beyond just being a Christian or finding it in Christ, identity in life in general. And so I think this is a really important one to have. And if you're somebody listening to this going, yeah, I don't really have identity, that's where I would start answering, who are you? What kind of person are you? And again, from a Christian perspective, who do you belong to? Is a really big component of this.
Well, it's that first line. If you don't know who you are, you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
What to do is very, very important in masculinity. We have to know what we're about, what we're doing, where we're going in life. But yeah, you don't know. If you don't know who you are, you don't know where you're going.
And this is why we say, like, take stances on things. You got to have an identity. Some people,
right?
The reason they don't have an identity is because I don't mean to be rude, but there's not a lot of substance to them. They don't have a lot of opinions or a lot of, like, just not a lot, just kind of a blank slate, so to speak. Not going to have a lot of identity there.
And that cliche of, like, well, my identity is in Christ. Okay, what does that tangibly mean? If you can't really say that's what it means to have an identity in Christ, you know, this is what it means. We can use the cliche, but at the end of the day, like, we have to know who we are before we do anything else. Give us number two.
Yeah, so number two, second pillar of healthy masculinity is mission. He says, every man needs to have a mission, and it's important for men to know that their hopes, dreams, plans, and aspirations matter too. I love this one. So, you know, after identity, you have to have something you're striving for. You have to have, I love the words he used, hopes, dreams, plans, and aspirations. Do you have those things? Or you just kind of, again, not to use the word aimless to death, but kind of just wandering through life like, I don't really know what I want to do. I don't really have anything I'm reaching for. I don't really have a mission. That's not any picture of healthy masculinity that we want to have. That's one thing I desperately want to pass on to my kids, specifically my son Jackson right now, when he gets to be that age, is and have hopes, have dreams, have plans, have aspirations. It doesn't mean you have to have your whole life planned out at 12 years old, nothing like that. But you need to have a mission. You need to have something you're striving for. And I think maybe some guys can kind of wait around till they're 30, 35, 40. I'll discover my mission. I'll find my mission. And they never really do.
Yeah.
Maybe part of your mission, obviously, this is another pillar later on, not to spoil it, but like maybe part of your mission is I want to be the best dad out there. I want to be the best husband out there. That can certainly be a part of your mission as well. But you got the point is you need to have plans and aspirations and have a mission.
Well, you're going to have a difficult time having a mission for your family if you don't have one for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And your mission can't be to find a mission. Right. That's initially, yeah, you want to find it. But like you said, I think the 35, 40-year-old who's just trying to find himself, like, his mission is perpetually finding a mission. And that's not a mission at all. You have to have something. This is where I'm going. This is where we're headed. And if you can do that on your own, if you can individually do that and say, this is where I'm headed, then you can pass on the mission to somebody else. Your wife is going to be able to join you in that. Because remember, a wife is a helpmeet. This goes back to Genesis chapter 2. Your wife is intended to be a helpmeet. That means you already have mission. Adam had mission in the garden. Adam, go tend the garden. Name the animals, right? Go tend the garden. Like, make sure you have your mission before you invite a wife into it, because otherwise, what's she helping with? She's a helpmeet. She's helping with what? An aimless guy who's trying to figure out what he's doing in life. She needs to come alongside your mission and help boost that mission as a godly wife. So it's important for young men, specifically before they really get into a marital situation, you know, into a marriage, to have this mission set. Number three is agency. He says, you have to believe that it is possible to take action to change your circumstances to the better, to take positive steps toward progress in your mission. Man, I love that. You have to believe that it is possible to take action to change your circumstances to the better, to take positive steps toward progress in your mission. Knowing I have the ability to do this. I can go, I see the mission there, and I can actually do it. I can go on that road, because it's one thing to be like, man, I'd love to run that marathon. That's my mission. And then you just don't walk toward it, right? Like, knowing I have the ability to run this marathon. I've trained for it. I know who I am, right? I know that I can do this, and that even if it's, I don't have the mission yet, but you know what? Part of my mission is to run the marathon, and it's going to take 6 months of training to get to that point. Okay, great, but you're training and you're taking agency and doing that. You know that it is possible for you to take that action. I think it's huge.
Yeah, I'm going
to
keep us moving here. That's really good. Number four, fourth pillar of healthy masculinity is virtue. He says, this is not just being morally upright, though that's part of it. It's cultivating excellence across multiple dimensions of virtue, the theological virtues, the cardinal virtues, the tactical virtues, etc. I think this one is just about as important as identity. If you have all these other things, but you're not a virtuous person, you don't understand. Yeah, he says it's not just morally upright. I guess I'll speak to that side of it, Joe, if you want to get to the other side of it. You got to have integrity. You got to be an honest person. You got to be a respectable person. Stuff that we've talked about on the Godly Men podcast before. But I appreciate that he has this in the healthy masculinity category of pillars. It's because what is masculinity so often not associated with? Virtue. Again, it's the aggressive, the violent, the I'll just bulldoze people to get what I want. That's how a lot of people look at masculinity. And I appreciate Aaron Wren here pointing out, no. There that you have to have a level of virtue. You have to have, and not just a level of virtue, like you have to be a virtuous person. Integrity, honesty, all the things that I already mentioned. That is, he doesn't have them ranked or anything, but I would say this is one of the more important pillars of healthy masculinity is to be virtuous.
And he goes, we don't have time for it. He has linked in this, so if you go and subscribe and go find this article, the theological, the cardinal virtues, and the tactical virtues, he goes into each one of those. Again, for time's sake, we're not going to go into all of those, but yes, be a virtuous person. Number four, I want to say, right? Is it five? Is knowledge. You need to know how the world works, not just how people tell you how it works or how you would like it to work, but how it actually does work.
This is big
because in this day and age, I think there's a lot of people, first off, that want to make the world, they want the world to work the way they want it to work, right? And so as dumb as that may sound, like, well, why can't it just be this way? Well, why can't I just get paid more? It's just not the way it works. Well, people should be able to just figure this. They can't. That's not how it works. And the knowledge, like he's talking about, you need to know how the world works. There's a lot of people that are kind of duped into things. We see this with old people. They get duped into, you know, these scams and things like that. But there's a lot of guys that get duped into how the culture works. They don't see the game that's being run.
Well, you know
where
we saw it? COVID.
COVID's a big one. They don't know how to think for themselves. They don't know where to go find the appropriate information, so they take it from CNN or they take it from Facebook or they take it from wherever else, and they're not finding, they're not really truth seekers, right? They're not really, they're not seeking knowledge all that much. They don't know how the world works, and you have a lot of young men that, in my opinion, I think are kind of ignorant of things, and they're waiting for somebody else to come along and tell them what to do and how to do it, rather than going and saying, I want to know how to do that, and I'm going to go figure it out. And we live in a day and age where you have YouTube videos to go figure out how to build, you know, build something or work on a car. You have just amazing articles online to go read about literally anything and everything. If you want alternate sides of history, if you want, I don't know, if you want to know how what actually happened with COVID, like, those things are out there. Yeah. You can go find that. So be somebody who is seeking knowledge and seeking to know how the world works, not just somebody who's waiting for everybody to tell them how it works.
Yeah, so I want to tie this into number six because it's related. Sixth pillar is wisdom. So you have knowledge and you have wisdom. Aaron Wren says you have to constantly grow in how to apply your virtue and knowledge in the right way in each situation, because nothing will undermine your mission like folly. Folly there obviously presented as the opposite of wisdom. This is kind of the classic definition that I grew up learning of wisdom, is like, knowledge is obviously learning things, learning different, you know, aspects of life, as we already talked about. Wisdom is how to apply those things. And so he kind of loops it in with virtue there as well, as applying your knowledge and applying your virtue. There is a level of, you can know a lot of things, be very book smart, academically smart, and not have a lot of wisdom.
Right.
Those two things are not synonymous. And so I appreciate him separating those two. Solomon, wisest man in the Bible, what is the kind of example of him showing his wisdom? It was an example, I think it's 1 Kings 3, with the, you know, the two moms that come to him about the, you know, whose kid is this? And Solomon applies the knowledge that he has to basically solve his way out of the situation. And, you know, that's obviously a biblical example of Solomon there, but I think wisdom in the sense of, you're emotionally intelligent, you can talk to people, you can, again, solve problems, you can look at something and not just, okay, I know a lot about this, okay, but what does that matter? How do I apply this? How do I apply this in my everyday life? I can read a book and gain a lot of book knowledge, okay, but then how do I actually go out and apply that? How do I keep that up here? Or how do I not just keep it up here, but apply it in everyday life? There's a lot of, same thing with Bible knowledge. You can have a lot of Bible knowledge and not be very biblically wise. And so, again, I'm kind of rambling here, but just to make the point that these two things are not synonymous, and there's a certain level of, as you grow in being a husband and being a father, you can read every parenting book out there, every book on how to be a good husband out there, and have all the head knowledge, but if you don't apply it and use the wisdom in the everyday situations, everyday life, it's never going to work.
Yeah, I like what he says right at the end, because nothing will undermine your mission like folly. There have been great guys who have just made really unwise decisions, and everything's crumbled because of it. We have to be, as men, we have to be those that can apply it. I love everything you said. Number seven is fraternity. Every man needs a band of brothers. I love this one. Nothing is easier to overlook than the need for fraternity. Too many men either have no friends or only the illusion of friends, who are really just the husbands of their wife's friends.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Such a good point here, because the lone wolf thing is very big, especially in masculine circles, of like, well, just go away for 6 months and come back and you'll be somebody different. And, you know, you're very much the lone wolf and you don't really have the band of brothers. And now what we're realizing is how important that actually is, to have guys that are going to walk alongside you that have this light. And you see this like in obviously band of brothers with military and things like that, sports teams. There is a special connection that guys form. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but that guys form. We need that. We need guys that are going to push us, that are going to call us out a little bit if we need it, that are going to encourage us when times are tough. When we're having a difficult time with our wives, it's not like we want to go spread everything and you know, all the problems of marriage, but like somebody that can just say, hey, you know, have you considered this? Or, man, I'm really sorry that happened to you. Even that can be a huge boost for a guy. And so having this band of brothers, like, he's right, it's very easy to overlook as we're busy building our lives. Like, yeah, we'll have friends later, or not that big a deal, or we're not great at pursuing or really putting into these friendships. Like, yeah, I got some guys that I, you know, I'll occasionally golf with. But we don't put into those relationships. We don't realize how big fraternity is.
Yeah, I don't know the exact verse reference, but it's in Ecclesiastes. The whole threefold cord is not easily broken.
Mm-hmm.
You're just stronger as a man when you have this group of guys that you feel like kind of as a, I don't even know the best way to put it, but like they've got your back. You know, there's a backstop there. You're not looking around like, I got nobody. No, you've got these guys. And so that empowers you in a way to maybe take more stands, sure, to challenge yourself more, again, just to have guys to bounce ideas off of. We've talked about this a ton. There's so much here that is valuable in having guys that you can, and not just acquaintances, not just shallow friendships as he talks about, but no, guys that you can truly rely on and kind of have your back.
I love that he has this as a pillar of masculinity, because a lot of guys look at it as like, it'd be nice, you know. That's not really
added
what it's
bonus,
about.
If I
yeah, it's an added bonus. You know, it's not really a pillar of being a man. Like, yes, it is. We need other guys that are going to be there to push us.
And you know how many 35 to 45-year-old guys don't really have this? They have the people, like you said, they have the people they work with, coworkers, maybe guys they golf with, maybe some people at church that, you know, maybe they'll be at the men's breakfast together or whatever it is, but they do not have this fraternity that he's talking about.
Yeah.
That's a challenge for
helping masculinity. They've got friends, politics friends, Bible friend, you know, church friends, sports friends.
And they're all acquaintances, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're all acquaintances, but they don't have this fraternity. I challenge you, if you don't have that, man, get your fraternity together. Number eight is family. Getting married and having kids is the normative path for men in life. A lot of young men say they want to get married someday. Well, someday gets here a lot faster than you ever thought possible, and it's all too easy to miss your window. Once again, this is why we wanted to share. It's just so good, so much wisdom to this particular post. But family, this is, I like how he says it's the normative path.
Yeah.
We look at it like, well, guys can just go do anything. And yeah, if you have kids, great. You know, I'll get around to that type of thing. Like, no, the path is to have family and to start building your legacy at a young age.
It frustrates me so much. We've talked about this a ton on our other podcast, Think Deeper. But it frustrates me a ton that specifically in the church, in the Church of Christ, for somebody to get up and say, all you young people, you need to be aiming at getting married and having kids, that just ruffles so many feathers. Yeah. If you're like, whoa, 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 what if they want to be single? What if they want to go travel? What if they want to, you know, go do... It's like, you know, we're not saying that that's necessarily a sinful thing, but the normative thing, what we should be doing, is getting married and having kids, as, you know, it's been the case for, oh, I don't know, thousands of years. And all of a sudden, now in the 21st century, we want to say, well, you know, you kind of have an option.
Yep.
It's just ridiculous to me. But yeah, family, again, is a pillar. It's,
right.
It is an absolute pillar of healthy masculinity, because nothing... How are you going to apply your wisdom? How are you going to conquer in your mission? How are you going to truly do... Like, what's the point if you don't have a family? Cool. So you get to say you did a lot of things as a single bachelor. Family adds so much meaning to your life. Again, purpose to your life, that if you don't have it, a lot of the other stuff is just kind of vain, to be honest.
Yeah. Because everything else that you would do outside of family, like guys are going to go out and they're going to make money and they're going to have sex and things like that, outside of family, that all leads to ruin. It all leads to folly. It leads to just stupidity. It leads to STDs and a lot of other things.
It leads to just being 80 years old and having nothing to look back on. Like,
that's
cool,
exactly,
I made
right.
a lot of money and had a lot of fun. Great.
And trying to be a perpetual, like, 20-year-old. You know, you're always going back to college days and keg stands and whatnot. And it's like, you're a man. You're a man. We don't do those things. We don't drink. We don't, you know, go out and carouse. Like, family is really what shapes us into being the men that we're supposed to be, and taking leadership of the most important things, which is our wives and our kids, or our wife and kids. Not our wives, hopefully not.
Not multiple.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you want to make sure that family is a pillar in your life as much as possible, if at all possible, especially as you're growing. Number nine, and then I'll let you get us in the last one. Number nine is suffering. Boxer Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. One of these days, life is going to punch you in the face. Think you aren't going to suffer in life, think again, he says.
What an interesting one to put on the list.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting. A lot of guys want to go through life and minimize as much suffering as possible. It's when you realize life is suffering in a lot of ways, and you embrace it, and you learn from it, and you grow from it, and you use it to shape you, mold you, and to put you into a better position and make you a better man. That's what men do. We don't cave under the pressure, under the suffering. We take it and we say, this is how I, you know, this is what I'm going to learn from it. Suffering is a part of life, and if you haven't figured that out, you very much will soon, because that's just the way that life goes.
Well, to use a smaller example to illustrate, if you go to the gym and work out and you don't sweat all that much, it's not really hurting, you're not really pushing yourself, that was not a great workout.
Right.
You probably did not gain a lot of muscle. That's, if you do that for a year, sure, maybe you get a little more toned or something, but you're not going to build any strength. Obviously, taking that to a broader approach of life, if everything is just always handed to you, you never have to push through anything. I mean, right now I'm working, you know, Joe is the same. We're working 50 plus hour weeks, probably closer to the 60 hour range, 55 to 60 hour range. You know, that's not necessarily, you know, I would consider that like the tough road, so to speak. We're not out here working 25, 30 hours. You have everything handed to us. Like, you got to have some suffering. You got to build up some calluses, so to speak, as they say. You have something?
Yeah, you're going to lose friends. People are going to die. You're going to get fired. Your wife is going to have, you know, she's
going to go through some rough patches.
Yeah, your kids are going to get sick, whatever it is, even if it's momentarily, even if it's just bad cold. There's going to be rough patches. Like, that's okay. Get used to embracing the toughness. Get used to embracing the fact that life is, there's going to be suffering. That sounds like, oh boy, yeah, that's a downer. Not really, because if you recognize suffering as the gift that it is of saying, Jesus Christ suffered, and if he didn't suffer, none of us would be here. Like, yeah. none of this would matter. He suffered so that we would not have to ultimately. But yes, life will be suffering in a lot of ways. That's okay, because we come through stronger. And if there's no sadness, then what is happiness, right? Yeah. You can only have, if everything is great, then, you know, if everybody's super, nobody is, right? Like, if everything is great, then what's great? Define it based off
valleys
of
and mountains. And if you're always on the mountain, then it's just not as,
you never appreciate it.
It's like living at the beach. Yeah,
that's exactly it. You never appreciate it. So go ahead and get us in the last one.
Number 10, 10th pillar of healthy masculinity is legacy. He says, what are you going to leave behind when you are gone? How will you have an impact in the world that extends beyond the span of your own life? Man, this is such a futuristic concept, such a almost esoteric concept for young men, you know, where we're so focused on the here and now, we're focused on, you know, tangible physical things. The concept of legacy, I think there's a lot of things tied to this. I think your family is a huge aspect of your legacy. What are you going to leave for your kids? What kind of person are you going to make them into? Because let's face it, the person that your kid is at age 40 is a direct result of you. The direct result of how you parented them from age 1 to 18, essentially. In my opinion, at least. Like, when Jackson's 45, if he is out there making a difference in the world, being a great husband and dad, that is my legacy. If he's out there, you know, just being a knucklehead at age 40, you know, doing stupid things, not a Christian, whatever, that's also my legacy. Like, it's a direct result of what I do. Same with Brooklyn, my daughter. And so family is a big part of your legacy. What do you leave behind your future generations, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren? What you're doing right now, what Joe and I are doing right now with our wife and kids, is hopefully going to positively affect our great-great-great-great-grandkids moving on. That's a part of legacy. But also, what he talks in, not to steal all the stuff here, Joe.
Oh, I got plenty.
I'm sure you do. Also, just what you do with your life. How do you impact other people? What work are you involved in that's going to leave an impact and leave a legacy? And, you know, this is not to say that you have to be out there, you know, curing brain cancer or, you know, doing just the most extravagant, glamorous things that are going to get front page on the newspaper stuff that's really impacting people. Those things are great. But also just being a really solid, trustworthy, dependable employee that's making a difference in your workplace. That's part of it as well. In your church, obviously, if you're serving people and really trying to make a difference and help grow your church or help grow the Bible knowledge of your church or help the young men at your church grow into, again, great husbands and great dads, that's what we mean when we talk about legacy. It's like, what are you doing outside of yourself? Are you just working so that you can retire at age 55 and go on a bunch of vacations? If so, that's not going to be a great legacy. You'll enjoy it and that'll be great, I'm sure. But what are you doing that furthers an impactful and valuable legacy? What would you add to that?
I was just thinking about the marshmallow test, you know, of the kids that are willing to take one marshmallow now instead of two later because they cannot delay gratification. So much of legacy is delayed gratification. You're not going to experience it today and it's not really going to matter today. And there may be things that I think of, like Rembrandt. I think he died an absolute pauper, had nothing. Van Gogh, the same. Years and years, you know, decades, hundreds of years later at this point, you know, for some of these artists, it's world renowned. They're some of the best ever. I mean, they would be multi-millionaires these days if we had seen it. Legacy, right? Like, we look at Rembrandt as one of the greatest of all time. He didn't know that at the time, like, that there weren't that many people that appreciated everything that he was doing. Sometimes that's you. Sometimes you have to delay gratification, and sometimes you have to play the long game and realize, I may not be appreciated for this today, but I will be in the future. So We could go out and pick the absolute hottie for a wife, even though she's a horrible person. Legacy. What's my legacy? She's going to be the one staying with your kids and teaching them. Are they going to grow up as Christians? Are they going to grow up as strong character individuals? Are they going to take after her, or maybe her character isn't that strong? You're willing to delay gratification. I love the hottie now, but you know what? I'm going to wait and see who God brings me and find somebody who's actually going to fit the mold for the next 250 years. If you think of that and you think of a lot of your decisions, and we don't want to be the guy who like never can live in the moment, but at the same time, if you can not just take that initial marshmallow now, but say, okay, what is God going to bring me in the future, and realize I need to be thinking about the next 250 years. I need to be thinking about my legacy, the generational thinking, right? That's going to cause you to go, gentle parenting, that's ridiculous. Moronic. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Why in the world would I do that? I'm training kids that are going to grow up to be adults that have to go out and conquer, that have to go out and do these things. I'm raising boys that are hopefully going to hit these 10 pillars. So delay the gratification, think long-term, think generationally, think about your legacy. What are people going to be saying about you in 50 years, 200 years, 500 years? If you can make a name, we talked about this a few episodes ago, if you can make a name for yourself, it's not just, again, maybe you don't make a name for yourself now, but maybe in 500 years, people will look back and go, he made a difference in life. He was the one that started this family chain that ended up being fantastic. Jonathan Edwards, right? We mentioned a few episodes ago. Somebody like that, that's a legacy. But that means maybe you're willing to delay gratification now. Like, it's not immediate gratification. You're willing to delay it so as to wait on God, to wait on the important things in life, and to recognize maybe I'm not getting all the gratification in the moment, but it will come later. And that's what legacy is all about. So
I was just going to recap. I mean, we covered a lot of ground. Again, shout out to Aaron Wren for this incredible list of 10 pillars of healthy masculinity. So we have identity. We have mission. We have agency. We have virtue. I was trying to do them by memory. I'm going to have to look at my cheat sheet here. We got knowledge, wisdom, fraternity, family, suffering, and legacy. All just vital.
Thank you, Aaron Wren.
Yeah, shout out Aaron Wren for this great list. And again, it's called, if you just Google 10 pillars of healthy masculinity, you'll find it on Google. He's got a lot of great stuff. But yeah, this is the Godly Young Men podcast. So we want to talk about masculinity. We want to talk about, especially from a biblical perspective, but also an honest perspective versus what the world gives you, as we kind of talked about a few episodes ago. So that's all I've got, Joe. I don't know if you want to wrap us, if you got anything else you wanted to throw out there.
Yeah, no, just appreciate you listening.
As always.
Check out Aaron Wren, R-E-N-N is the last name. But yeah, this has been episode 85 of the Godly Young Men podcast. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.